Okay, my name is Rick Eakins. I'm from Rives Junction, Michigan, a very small town just north of Jackson. And I'm a sophomore in college. My major is Ag and Natural Resources Communications.
Now, you've had a little bit of time to look at this. Are there particular questions that interest you?
Yes, there are. I'm on page 2 down at the bottom, number 13.
Okay.
Numbers 13 and 14. I've got quite a few through here.
Why don't we start, lead into those questions by, if you could describe briefly the kind of high school you went to and the kind of change you had to undergo when you suddenly found yourself at a school where there were 40,000 students.
Yes, I went to high school in Leslie, which is a small town. I graduated with 100 people, and I knew every one of them. I knew everybody in the class in front of me and the class behind me. And I really enjoyed that experience. It was something that I'll never forget. And I was very active, and I did good in school. I got a lot of academic awards, and I wasn't sure if I would be able to keep that up when I did get into college. And so that was an adjustment there, is going from extremely high grades to mediocre grades. And my first mediocre grade really brought me down to the level I should be when I got here. So, like I said, it was a small town. The first thing that scared me when I got up here was the number of people. This is the big city to me. East Lansing is the city, and Michigan State University is a city.
Can you describe, Leslie, for me, the population, how many, whether you have a post office, drugstore, et cetera, et cetera?
We do. We have a main street. There are quite a few businesses. We have 5 video stores.
Could you just begin that by saying Leslie is thus and so, so that I have your...
Okay, Leslie is a small town. We do have a few gas stations and a post office. There are about 2,500 people. That was the city for me for a little while, because I live out in Rives Junction, and that's out in the country. That's the boondocks. So, but Leslie was very nice. One of the benefits of the small town is you do know everybody, and... But that also goes, you know, what goes around comes around. Everybody knows everything about you. So that's one thing that I didn't encounter when I got up here.
That's all right if you have a good reputation.
Right. If you do have a good reputation, then there are no problems. But you can't get away with much in a small town, especially because my mom is a teacher at Leslie High School, where I went to school.
What'd she teach?
She teaches, it's an adult course, and it's for school-age parents. Teenage parents, and she's right across the street from the high school, so she knows everything that goes on. But we didn't get in much trouble. I say we. I have a sister who's 2 years older than I am, and a brother 2 years younger.
What kind of trouble did you get into that was Leslie considered bad?
Leslie considered bad. Boy, I don't know. I think I skipped a class one time, and I went with my friend to. He was going up to get an allergy shot. And I just didn't feel like being there, so I went with him. And that was, they adjust your grade point average for that, but they didn't consider that a big deal. That's basically the only trouble I got in.
Can you describe Rives Junction, how far it was from Leslie, and whether it was a farming community or what it was?
We were surrounded by farms out in Rives Junction. All of our neighbors are farmers. We're 6.5 miles out of Leslie. So it wasn't that far to go, but you couldn't just walk to town. The nearest town to us was 3 miles away, and that was Rives. But everybody out there we're all close out there, and when you go on vacation, everybody will watch your place for you. So it's a tight-knit community, even though the houses are scattered far apart.
Can you describe the farmland, what kind it was, what crops you grew, and how you fit in with your brother and sister?
Mm-hmm. We live on top of a hill, and we've got a sandy, loamy-type soil. It drains very well, but we do grow alfalfa hay, pure alfalfa hay for cash, and that grows very well on the farm. And the corn crop we put in, it's not very big. But we do grow corn out there, and that does very well when we have a good season. Like this year, we didn't get much of anything off of there because of the dry conditions and then the rain. So
How many acres?
160 acres, and we have 150 tillable. So that leaves a fairly good size area for the house and the barns.
What kind of equipment? Farm equipment?
What type?
Tractors
we have? Yeah,
combines?
We have no combines. We aren't that big. Everything is basically small equipment.
Which was?
We have a John Deere tractor that isn't very big, and we have two. So we really don't feel that we need a lot of big equipment out there. Big equipment takes a lot of space to turn around. And when you've got small fields, our fields are cut up into 20 acres. And the whole farm is cut up into 20-acre fields. And we have fence rows between each, and you really don't have a lot of room out there for big equipment. So we just like to keep it simple, keep it small, keep expenses down that way. And it really works out nice.
What were your responsibilities specifically growing up? What did you have to do?
Everything.
Which?
Which entailed baling hay, raking hay, stacking hay. We had to do all the chores. Because on the farm, like I say, we had a swine operation. And every morning we did the chores, and if it was hot, we went out in the afternoon and we watered everybody and made sure they were all in the shade. And we did chores at night.
Watered the swine?
The pigs, yeah. Mm-hmm. Got to keep them growing. Got to keep them going. So they're money makers, and we've got to make sure that they're doing what we need them to do. And in the springtime, my brother and I we helped out getting all the crops planted. Basically, Dad did all the work, but because we were in school. But when we came home, we always had to be there to disc a field, to plow a field. He did all the planning. And we picked rocks off the fields. We did all kinds of good stuff.
Can you talk a little bit about your brother and sister, whether they were older, younger, and how they did in school compared to you? Just a general rundown.
My sister is 2 years older, and she did fairly well in school. She was an average student. She was in the band, and she was very good in the band. She excelled in band. She played the trumpet, and I think they really missed her when she left, because trumpets have sort of gone downhill. Of course, that's a biased opinion, but I still think that they missed her. She goes to Findlay College now. She's studying equine science. And my brother is 2 years younger, and he's an athlete. I like to think he's following in my footsteps. He runs all the same events I do in track. He, of course, he was in a different position in the football team, but both of us love sports, and Jim is an average student too. So,
are your brother's times better than yours?
No. I've got a few records I would like him to break, but I don't think he's going to do it.
What did you participate in?
I was in football. I was a starting quarterback and defensive halfback. Played both sides of the ball. Had a great time. We never won a game my senior year, but I had a great time. I got injured a lot, but I always like to think I was in good shape. It's just that people like to hurt me. But in track, I ran basically everything. I was utility runner, but my specialty was the 800 meter, and sometimes I ran the mile, and I liked the relays, the mile relay and the 2 mile relay. So, and I did pretty good. I went to qualified for the state meet 3 years in a row, and I did all right.
Do you have any perspective on your life on a farm, in the sense that now that you've been away from that and you've talked to other guys your age and have heard their descriptions of their backgrounds from big cities or wherever, perhaps some foreign students as well, do you have any basis for, do you feel that you have a basis for comparing your background with others? And if so, do you make some kind of judgment of your own background? Do you understand what I'm asking?
I think so. I'll try to answer that. As far as growing up on the farm, I wouldn't have it any other way. Being brought up out there, I don't like living in the city. And somebody can come to me and say, you know, I've lived in the city all my life and I love it, and the people and everything is just so close and you're there in 5 minutes, and that's just, everything seems so rushed. And I like to take things a little slower, and I think growing up in the farm community has done that.
How about the constant work? I mean, you were never You had a moment to yourself, didn't you?
We had breaks, yeah, but in the summertime when you're baling hay, you start 10 in the morning, you know, you have to rake it. We have to get up early to do chores and to get the equipment ready, and then you have to rake it and wait for it to dry and bale it, and sometimes we didn't get back in the house till 9, 10 o'clock. But I never thought of it as work. It was something that I liked to do.
What would you do as to blow off steam? I mean, you could do that. I mean, occasionally we'd get Saturday night off.
Mm-hmm.
Would a bunch of you hop in a car and go drink beer, or what would you do? I mean,
I don't know if any of my friends drink beer. We would get together. We'd go somewhere. We'd play football in the backyard. We like to do a lot of active things. In the winter, we'd play hockey on the pond down the road. We'd go into Jackson and watch the movies and roller skating, things like that. I always thought of it as fun stuff. Friends would come up to my house in the winter and we'd go sledding, and we had a huge hill in the back. We'd ski. We did all kinds of, most of it was outdoor activities. We didn't like to sit around very much.
Well, it sounds like a very healthy, open existence.
Mm-hmm. I thought so too.
Well, what is your opinion of what's happening today, and even on a high school level, where drugs are beginning to be prevalent, and where kids don't have the kind of responsibility you did? I mean, you got home from school and you had chores to do frequently. Mm-hmm. Either that, or your father or your mother, because she was a teacher, was still going to make sure you did your homework properly, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what is your reaction to a lot of other high school kids who were not growing up in this kind of environment?
Responsibility placed on me as a younger boy helped out a lot. But I think that a lot of the problem lies within the home. I think parents are the ones who shape you, who start creating your personality, and it's the way that I was treated when I was at home that, you know, they gave me a lot of responsibility, and that made me feel good about myself. And they encouraged me, and they were always around. Parents, I find these days, really, they say, you know, your kid comes home from school and it says, "Mom, I'm going over to Bob's house." And they say, "Fine, no problem." And my parents, I wasn't that spontaneous. I had to come home and I'd say, "All right, is it okay if maybe tomorrow I go over to Bob's house?" Because I couldn't just come home and leave. There was always something to do. And I had to make sure that they knew ahead of time that I was going to be gone so that they could plan for that absence. And I think that parents need to take a little more charge. Now, a lot of people can criticize me because I'm not a parent, but that is my opinion. Parents shape their children, and I think my parents had a lot to do with the way I turned out.
Do you feel that you really acquired directly their moral values? Their attitude towards right and wrong, their whole concept of what was right and wrong?
Mm-hmm. I do. I hold most of the values.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
I hold most of the values that my parents do.
Sometimes, what are those values?
As far as my dad goes, he's always been a hard worker, and he values that. He likes the outdoors. He doesn't really like people around a lot. He's not a people person. He values the things that you put your strength into, your sweat into. You know, what you make is yours, and you should be able to keep that. My mom is a talker. She's a teacher, and she's a talker. She likes people. She's very outgoing. She is very involved with her program. She puts a lot of overtime into her program.
She's more the intellectual of the family.
She is. She is the intellectual of the family. Dad is more practical. He's an intelligent man, but it's more practical intelligence. Whereas Mom is the bookworm. Mom studied history. She's a history teacher.
She go to college?
She did. She has a master's degree.
And your dad?
My dad has an associate's degree. So he went to Ag Tech here at State, and both my parents graduated from Michigan State. And Ag Tech is a 2-year program.
All right. So you've described this, what I consider to be a remarkably healthy background. There may be some flaws there, but I'm not asking you to bare your soul, not in 1 hour. And then suddenly you find yourself in a freshman dorm with all kinds of people, where drinking goes on, where they're yelling and running up and down the halls, and where there's a lack of responsibility, totally, compared to the environment that you knew, both in high school and at home.
Mm-hmm.
How did you react to all this? Can you talk about that?
I think it's all values. Most of my values were formed when I got here. And I see people running around, you know, with beer in their hands, and everybody wants to get drunk. Everybody's happy to be away from home. But I just didn't see that. I didn't feel that I had to tear away from my parents and just go crazy. I wasn't brought up to be wild and zany and just to get drunk and take advantage and not be concerned about what goes on around me.
But everyone was doing it around you. You must have been tempted.
A little more history on myself. I went through 2 weeks of peer pressure training. We used that to talk to fifth and sixth graders about peer pressure and people trying to get them to use drugs or alcohol. So I was prepared for that. And I thank one of my teachers at the high school for getting me involved in that. That was really a wonderful experience for me, knowing I knew when I got here what was going to happen. People were going to be sticking beer cans in my face and other specialty crops, if I may. And I was prepared for that. Peer pressure.
Did that happen?
Sure, it happened.
Can you describe that?
People would just come down to my room and they'd say, "We're collecting for a keg. We're going to buy a keg and we're going to bring it up here and we're going to have a big bash. Would you like to pay?" And I said, "No, I'm not going to drink, so I'm not going to pay." And after a while, it just sort of spread around the floor that I was a non-drinker. And so they left me alone. And as long as I didn't feel that I had to give in to anyone, and I really didn't care what they thought of me, if I didn't drink or if I did drink or what.
Were you the exception, at least in terms of numbers? Did most of the people on the floor drink?
I think when I first got here, everybody on my floor did, including my roommate. But my roommate was a senior, and he was a fifth-year senior, so he had settled down quite a bit. But he still, on occasion, would like to go out and get plastered. But I just never felt too much pressure. I never felt that I had to break down and give in to somebody.
All right. There you are, isolated, in a sense.
Not really.
But I mean in the sense that you're the only one on the floor not drinking in that first year.
Uh-huh. I did have a lot of people tell me that they...
things going through your mind there. And are you laying a heavy judgment on them? Are you feeling left out? Are you feeling superior? What is going through your mind?
I'd never thought about being superior. I'm not trying to be superior. I just don't. I don't like being out of control. Basically, it's just a value that I hold. I don't like being out of control. And I can easily walk up and down my hallway and see all these people passed out on the floor. The next day, I can listen to them talking about how they don't remember what happened last night. And I've always said, if I'm going to make an ass of myself, I want to remember it, so that somebody doesn't bring it up and I don't know and I can't defend myself if I need to. But I just don't like being out of control. And the more I see them, the more I know that I don't want to be out of control.
But did it disgust you? I don't mean to suggest that you did or did not feel superior, but you must have some sort of judging process must have been going through your mind. Some of these people were bright, some of them were stupid. Some of them were drinking on Saturday night and still doing well in engineering. Some of them were flunking out and wouldn't come back after freshman year A lot of things were happening to them. Were you looking at them with the detachment of a sociologist, or were you condemning them as a holier-than-thou type, or what kind of judgments were you making of these people?
I think most of them were rebels, not in a severe way. I can understand how a lot of people have to, when they do get away from home, they just have to let it out. They have to go crazy for a while. So a lot of times I could respect that, because most of the people on my floor did grow up in the city, and it has been my opinion for a long time that you just get cooped up in the city, and you need to just go crazy every once in a while. But sometimes I do pass judgment. I won't deny that, but I try not to say anything about it. It's not up to me to judge somebody else. So if I did have a strong opinion about somebody, I usually kept it to myself. And that helped me out a lot, because then I didn't make any enemies.
Okay, you have a roommate, the smoking marijuana, that's probably coming in at all hours, who is being inconsiderate. Now, there are ways of handling this. You can take him by the scruff of the neck and throw him against the wall and say, if it happens one more time, you can try and reason with him. You can try any number of things. How did you handle that?
I moved out.
Can you talk about, just describe that?
I can describe the course of events. I could smell it when I walked in the room. And because of this peer pressure training again, we learned what all these drugs smell like. So I knew what it was when I came into the room. And my first reaction was, if there is ever a search, a random search, it's my butt too. I can also get thrown out because it's my room, which means, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law. So if it's in my room, that must mean that I belong to it, and the university could eject me too. So the first thing I did was I talked to my resident assistant. And then through there, we went to the housing department, and then to the Department of Public Safety. And I took all the necessary steps, and basically the department brushed me off and said, we can't do anything until you tell us who his supplier is. I tried to maintain my wits, and I said, well, that's not my job. So I just made it easy on everybody, and I moved across the bathroom.
Into a separate room?
Into a different room. I live in a suite. So the guy across the bathroom needed a roommate, so I just moved over there. And within a week, my first roommate had another roommate. So
that's this is tough to do. I mean, you're walking out on somebody, really, and although you may say that you had to do it, there was no alternative. Did you make any attempt to confront him with this and to ask him why he was doing it and if he could stop?
No, I didn't. He really didn't seem to care about a whole lot. He never went to class. He didn't get out of bed until 3 in the afternoon. He didn't go to bed till 4 or 5 in the morning. He wasn't too concerned about anything except for the money that he needed to buy whatever it was he had to buy. And he wasn't very considerate of me. I asked for a roommate who didn't smoke, and I got one who did smoke, and he was constantly smoking in the room when he was home. And I did ask him to stop, and he would stop briefly, but he'd light up again. So the fact that he had no consideration for me just made me have none for him. My philosophy is an eye for an eye.
Did this make you angry?
At first it did, but just the fact that I had my head on straight and I just got out of there, it made my parents angrier than it did me. How dare the university put me with somebody like that?
Do you think that the story that you tell me is a common occurrence? I mean, are there many drinking and drug problems in freshman year or any year?
There
are. In the dorms?
In the dorms, it's a big problem. It's a problem that I think needs to be dealt with. The policy is there can be no illegal substances, and there can be no open sources of alcohol, which means a keg. but they still bring them up. You can bring a truckload of cases of beer in, you can bring a truckload of cans in, but you can't bring a keg in because it is an open source. I don't see what the difference is. But the policy says you cannot bring a keg in, and people come asking me for a trash can so they can smuggle theirs back out. I think that something needs to be done.
What would you do in a case like that?
That if, I have.
Do you have a trash can?
No, I don't.
But there's an empty one sitting right over there. Let me have it just for a few minutes.
I don't have one big enough to put a keg in. If somebody brings a keg up, it's their problem if they get caught. It isn't mine.
How many people have been busted for that?
None.
Are you telling me that the discipline doesn't exist then?
Discipline does not exist. We do have a resident assistant on the floor, but they don't like to be enemy number one. They don't want everybody on the floor to hate them. So they're lenient, and they say, all right, I'm going to warn you this time. Don't let me catch you again with the keg. And students are pretty good about hiding things, but when everybody heads down the hall with a glass in their hand, you know what's going on.
What's the answer?
I don't know what the answer is. When I can go down to the Department of Public Safety and say, I have somebody in my room who smokes dope, and I know this is illegal, and I think that something should be done about it, and they tell me to find out who his supplier is, then I think that something needs to be done within the Department of Public Safety first. Until they can straighten it out, find out what their values are, they'll give me a parking ticket for parking to split the line on the sign, and then they'll go turn around and tell a student to find out who a drug supplier is. I think DPS, I think their main concern is raking in the bucks from those parking tickets. They say they're here to help the students. Recently, they were given firearms, 15-round firearms. And I want to know why a campus cop has to have a gun that'll shoot 15 rounds. I think the pistols they had were more than adequate. Why do you have to shoot somebody 15 times?
Good question. All right, we've been talking essentially about a negative aspect of living in the dorm. What was there of positive value?
Friendships. They say that you will start some friendships in college that you'll never forget, and I've only been here for 5 terms and I already have. You can get really close to people up here. Like I said before, I didn't like all the people around. It's just too cluttered for me. But the people I do meet, once you single out those who aren't just crazy fanatics, once you single out those who aren't up here to take advantage of everything, you do find a lot of people who are very nice. There's a guy right now that I run with as often as possible, and we talk, and I've met a lot of people through him. And the second roommate I had graduated last year, and he got married, and I went to his wedding in Detroit, and I keep in touch with him. He's in Virginia right now in the Army, and soon to be moving out to Kansas. So as soon as I get their new address, I'm going to be writing to them out there too. So you do find a lot of friendships. Another aspect of living on campus is everything is close enough where you can get to it easily. The cafeteria, I don't have to cook. Cleaning is minimal. I have no bills to pay except the phone bill. There's a lot of responsibility that the housing does take off of my shoulders. And I like that because when you have 17, 18, 19 credits, you have a big workload, you have a lot to do. I don't want to worry about paying the bills. I don't want to worry about them sitting over there on the desk. The university takes care of all that for me. Facilities. I like the facilities out here. They have very nice athletic facilities, and I take advantage of them. So there are a lot of things about the university that I do like.
Well, if you had a son, would you recommend that he go to Michigan State?
I don't think I would recommend any university. My parents didn't recommend any to me. They told me it was entirely up to me. I take the values that I learn and I apply that to where I want to go. So I don't think that it's up to me to tell my son where to go, to even recommend. The basic fact that my parents both graduated from Michigan State and they both have nothing but good to say about the university helped out, but they didn't say anything to me.
All right, I come to you and I say, look, you've gone to Michigan State. I've got a boy who wants, who's considering it. Would you recommend it?
It's a very prestigious university, and job placement out of this university is the best I've seen. I would say yes. He may have troubles with some housing, but that's just something you have to watch out for. You have to be prepared for that. And if you're going to come to a big university, I think you are prepared for that.
Do you think this is a part of life? It's like a rite of passage this freshman year when you are trying to determine what your values are, and you're drinking and you're carousing and you're wondering what you're going to major in. Is there no easy way beyond all that? Do people have to, is it inevitable that so many people suffer as they go through that?
No, it's not inevitable. It's an atmosphere. Everybody parties, so I'm going to also. And that's just the atmosphere that's created up here. It's supposed to be fun. College is supposed to be a lot of fun, and sometimes they put aside the work, the schoolwork. That I came to the university to get a degree. Secondary is the fun, but the first thing I want to do is get my degree.
What are your plans specifically, and where do you see yourself 10, 15 years? Will you be married? Will you be working in a farm? Will you be involved in a specific kind of business, or is it...
It's pretty much open right now. I'd like to be married. I have plans. No one special right now, no one specific. I'd like to be working for a corporation. I'd like to be out in the field with the farmers. I'd like to be diversified. I don't want to sit down and do a desk job. I don't want to go back out and work on the farm. Basically because I see now that you can't make a living on the farm unless you inherited the big business and you're already rolling and you just stepped into it and it's already making a lot of money. If it wasn't for my mom, we couldn't live on the farm. Mom makes the money that gets my sister through college, puts the food on the table, pays the bills, and Dad makes the money that goes back into the farm and pays the farm bills.
But he's still making a profit of some kind, isn't he?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. It's a hard business, and you gotta love it. You really have to love it to stay in it. But you can't, if you're on a small farm, you can't really make a living. You're making the same spread between profit and expenses, only on a larger farm, that's a lot more money. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So they can make a living that way. But I would say, except for the farm down the road, most of the farmers that I know have two incomes.
Your father is his own boss.
That's true.
He doesn't have to answer to the corporate manager, president, vice president, assistant vice president, etc., etc.
That's true.
Does that appeal to you, that independence?
Very much so. It does. I'm not one for taking orders.
This leads into my next question, which is, how are you going to find a job in the corporate world which will give you the kind of independence that you have grown to respect by seeing your father work, seeing his independence, and by knowing yourself, which is as a person who wants to call his own shots?
First of all, I have to look long and hard to find something like that. But I do know that I'm starting from the bottom and working my way up. I don't expect to jump right into a business that is mine. I want to start, we'll say, smaller and report to my boss and work my way up. And as long as there's a challenge, I'm going to take it. I'm going to work my way up until I can be my own boss. And not necessarily my own boss. If I'm working in the communications department for Dow Chemical, we'll say, I go out to a site and I talk to people about the new product that we have on the market. I can take what they give me and I can use that, but I can use my own words too. So it's up to me to bring these people in as new customers. That to me is challenging. That's being my own boss, is the way I want to do it. And then I bring what I've done back home.
You want to be in the field, not stuck in an office.
I don't want to be in an office. In an office, they have too much control over me. My dad will tell you that I didn't like it when I had to be under control. But I do see that as a controlled environment. And I'll come back to the office to do what I need to do, but I'd rather be out in the field.
I don't know how long that's been out, but it doesn't make any difference. I've been picking it up with the other mic anyway.
Okay.
You said you were a junior. Sophomore.
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 Soon to be junior. Yeah. Working hard.
You've had a chance to evaluate a lot of instructors, courses, different types of classes.
Mm-hmm.
Introductory level classes, or 101, 100 series, I guess, whatever they're called.
Mm-hmm.
Can you briefly evaluate the quality of the instruction?
I'm a critical person. I've had one instructor, professor, and I thought he was outstanding. Most of the other professors I've had, they're all right. Everybody can use a little improvement.
Comment on the size of the classes. Have you had any classes where there are 5 TV monitors hanging from the ceiling and there are 300 people in the class?
Yes, I've had a class with 600. I've had two classes with 500. Most of my classes are 100 people. There are sometimes monitors scattered all over the place, but the biggest classes, the 600, 500, 400 classes, you just see this little figure down in the front of the room with the microphone and a huge overhead. And that's what we have to go on. So I try to get down as close to the front as I can just to see enough of what I want to see. But I don't sit right on top of the professor. It's a lot more personable when you have a smaller class. But some of the basics, you have to take a big class. Economics is a huge class. Food and society, food sciences, huge class. That's just the way it is.
Does it have to be that way?
When
is the university saving money?
When you have 60,000 students, you only have so many professors, and everybody needs to take this general ed course, economics. Everybody has to have it. The university can't employ enough professors to have 25 in a class. They've got to group us all together.
Did you learn from those classes?
Sure. I learned. All you have to do is pay attention. And that's not hard to do, really. In a class of 600, most people get real irritated when somebody behind them starts talking. So, and most people are considerate in class. Most people don't cause much trouble in class. If they're going to cause trouble, they just don't go.
And how many classes have you had personally, a dialogue with a professor, which lasted more than a single question?
I don't think I've had any. Most of my classes have been big enough that they don't really open it up for public discussion.
What is the difference then between a class of that type where you are simply listening to information presented to you and reading out of a text?
They put it to you in a different perspective. It's easier for me to learn when somebody tells me. It's harder for me to pick it up when I read the book. So I read the book and then I go to class and listen to how they picture this, and it all falls into place for me. I can put those two different sources together and figure out what's going on.
On the other hand, if in his presentation he is not drawing on his personal background, then the class is not going to be as valuable, is it?
No.
If he's only regurgitating textbook material,
mm-hmm,
and is not relating it to what he has learned on a personal level, then what is the point of his being there?
I think We've discussed this in my family more than once, that a lot of college professors you'll find have never been out of school. They go to school, they get a bachelor's, a master's, a PhD, they start teaching. They don't spend day one in their field. And I think that to be a professor, you should spend 5 years out in your field. So you can bring that experience back. Because, as you say, if the professor has never been out of school, all he is doing is regurgitating information. There's no personal experience at all. Most of my professors, that's what they did. They've never been out of school. I think you have to love school to do it that way.
Well, if most of your professors have been doing that, and that is not the hallmark of a good professor, in the sense that they have not been out in the real world, then most of your professors have not been very good.
Most of them haven't. I justify that by saying that most of the classes I've taken are general ed. When I get into my field of study, the classes will be smaller, and we'll see how it goes then. I know through my advisor that most of the professors I will be in contact with have had experience in the field. So I can say that if it's general ed, then all I have to do is memorize it and get through it. If it's in my field of study, I want a good professor who knows what's going on out there, not just in here in the university. I want him to know what's going on. Being only my second year, I haven't had a lot of courses in my field of study. So I think it's going to improve.
I think it will too. Do you think that it is the university's basic responsibility to stretch your mind? How much responsibility do you exercise in this task? And as you think of I'm sure you already have an answer of some type, but I'm also very much interested in what your perception or understanding is of how other students feel about this. Have they come here to be entertained, spoon-fed, and to what extent do they get irritated when the professor suggests that they do a little bit more work than perhaps they should have been doing?
First of all, I think it's entirely up to me to stretch my mind. The role of the university is a tool. They are the tools for me to use to stretch my mind. They should be available for me, but it shouldn't be such a structured atmosphere that I come in and the teacher says, "Ricky, did you do your homework today? And are you going to turn it in? And what are you going to do after class?" That shouldn't be the way it is. I should come to college.
In grammar school.
Right. I come to college because I want to learn, not because it's written in stone that I have to come to college. The university is not supposed to stretch my mind unless I want it to. So stretching my mind is all up to me.
You would maintain that it is the responsibility of the university to create an environment, though, in which that mind can be stretched.
It is, but it's not the role of the university to make me do that.
No.
I can come to college and just go to class and just get by, get passing grades, and that, for some, that's satisfactory. Not for me, though. I've excelled in high school. I want to excel in college. Then that's up to me to do that. How I budget my time after class, how much I put into each class after the class is over.
How have you done? Are you on the dean's list? Or?
No, I'm not on the dean's list. I'm trying right now, if this term goes well, to get up to a 3-point average. And for me, a 3-point average in college is very good. I think 4-point students study too much. You have to have a social life. That's part of being in college.
What is your social life? What do you mean by that?
Well, I think you can't be cooped up in your room all the time with your nose in a book. I think you have to get out. You have to meet people. I roam the hall a lot. There's a lot of people I know in the building. I go to the weight room. I see a lot of people there. Just doing things that you like to do, and you meet a lot of people that way. And so if I don't feel like studying, I go down the hall to see who else is not studying, and we do whatever together.
Do you feel that the quantity of information that is thrown at most students is excessive? excessive in the sense that they really haven't filtered that information. They really haven't determined how they're going to use it on some personal level.
You hear a lot of people say, especially in math classes, what good is this going to be to me? My math class right now is algebra and trigonometry, and I'm a communications major. Why do I need math? I'm sure that sooner or later I'll figure that out. But I don't think that the information is excessive. I think they do a good job of presenting it to us. They don't overload us, and then again, they don't underload us either.
But if you're not clear about why you're being asked to study something, it's hard to motivate yourself to study.
It is. It is. It gets kind of tough. But I think that it all goes on my record. It all goes on my transcript. When I get out of this university, they aren't just going to take the classes in my field of study and send those grades to my employer. They're going to send the whole transcript. And so that's incentive enough for me to try and do as best I can. Because I'm not the only one who's going to be looking at those grades. And it's always been easy for me. In high school, it was easy for me to do good. I always got good grades in high school, and I like to look at those. Those look really neat. It pleased my parents, too. And that was, in high school, that was enough incentive to keep me going. The fact that I was looked up to because I had good grades. And I just like the feeling of getting good grades. And that pushes me along. I don't like to get behind in my work. I do a little bit of homework every day, and that's how I budget my time. So I'm not one of those people who goes to the bar Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night and then has to spend all of Sunday in books. I don't like to do that. Sunday is my day off.
How would you compare your study habits with the other kids on your floor, guys on your floor?
My roommate is pretty good about his study habits. He comes home from class, and between one class and the next, he'll do a little homework. But most of the people on the floor, on my way to class, they'll be still in bed. They'll be watching TV, playing cards. A lot of people play cards on my floor. They usually don't do their homework until after midnight, and then they don't do a whole lot of it. Most of the people on my floor are Sunday studiers. That's what I call them. They wait until the last minute, and then they do it.
What percentage of the students have TVs in their room?
Probably 95.
Is it cable?
So one complex has cable. The Brody complex has cable TV. That's the only complex who does. That's an experiment, they said. It's been an experiment for more than a few years, but I think most everybody has a TV.
Well, if we jump back to the questions 13, 14, and 15, the 15 really interests me. That is a fact. The Division of Student Affairs did prepare a student profile, and 50% of the students said that they needed no improvement in those areas, and the areas are listed A through D. What is your reaction?
I think that everyone has room for improvement, especially in the area of listening to others. A lot of times people don't catch what you say, people aren't paying attention to what you say. Not that what I have to say is any more important than anyone else, but things can get misconstrued between one person and another. And I think people need to apply themselves a little more when they are listening to somebody else. A lot of people hold their opinions, and they hold them pretty high. And they say that if you don't hold the same opinion that I do, then you're worthless to me. So why even listen to you? Why even talk to you?
You are telling me on a personal level that you feel that it is important to improve in those areas.
Yes, I do.
I agree with you. My question is, or one of my questions, how can 50% of the students who completed that questionnaire say that they need no improvement?
people aren't going to criticize themselves. I think in some surveys, as I said before, somebody might tell you what you want to hear. And maybe what they think you want to hear is that I need no help. I'm fine just the way I am. Some people say that I am my own worst critic. I say that people don't want to put off a bad image. And so they'll tell you, yes, I'm a good listener.
But to assert that you need no improvement in these areas is the equivalent of saying that you've reached some level of perfection, isn't it? And that's rather difficult to reach when you're 19 or 20. In fact, some people never reach it.
I don't think I'm ever going to reach perfection.
I don't think many people even come close to it.
No. There are a lot of factors that can influence a survey. Perhaps some didn't understand the question. You have to look at it that way. Maybe there is a certain element of error, but if 50% of the people are going to say that they need no help, I think those are the people who haven't stepped back and really taken a look at themselves yet. They say, I'm headed in this direction, I know exactly where I'm going to go, and I think it'll take a disastrous event to slow them down and until they realize that there is no perfection.
Well, this generation has been labeled the me generation by a lot of the mercenary, acquisitive generation.
Mm-hmm.
Journalists have written that.
Yeah.
Keeps cropping up. I want to get a good job. It must pay $30,000 year one, and by year five I should be making thus and so, should have attained this kind of material standard of living, blah, blah, blah. Now you're in contact with people your age all the time because you're in college.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with the perception that these journalists have come up with, that it is in fact the me generation, that most of your contemporaries are overly materialistic, etc.?
Yes, I do.
Talk about that.
Overly materialistic is an easy one to give an example of. The guy right next door to me has a huge stereo with a speaker in every corner. When you have an 11 by 14 room, I really don't see why you need four speakers in there. They have CD players, they have color TVs, they have big refrigerators, they have, you name it, they have it. Material things are very important.
Where's the money coming from?
To a college student, mom and dad. If you don't have to pay for school, then you can take the money you made at your summer job and you can buy a CD player, you can buy another telephone, you can buy your color TV, as long as mom and dad are paying that bill.
Mom and dad know this. Are they equally materialistic?
Probably. I would think so. Most of the people I know who do have these color TVs, when I see mom and dad bring them up, dad is wearing his suit. He's got a three-piece suit on, you know, the tie, and I don't know a whole lot of people who would come to college to drop their son off wearing a business suit. It doesn't seem proper to me. It doesn't seem like, you know, I say, Dad, loosen up a little bit.
Your dad would come up in the John Deere tractor.
He would.
Nine. But, I mean, you must get a reaction from your parents about types like this. I mean, they must have an understanding of your peers and the kind of people you associate with in the freshman dorm and so forth. What do they feel about these people?
They're spoiled. Especially, my dad would especially say that. Being a man who's worked for everything, he hasn't had anything just given to him. He didn't go to college and have his car given to him as a graduation present. I know a lot of students who do. I know a girl right now who got through her freshman year and her parents gave her a car because of that. My dad has always worked for everything that he's gotten, and he just doesn't respect people who don't work for what they have.
Are you telling me too many young people are getting too much too soon?
I think they are. That's just my perspective. That's my opinion. I think that, especially being in the situation that I'm in, mom pays quite a bit to send my sister to school. She goes to a private college, and it's an expensive college. And 6 years ago, Dad and my brother Jim and I started this partnership with the idea that when we got to college age, we could use that money to go to school. So in a sense, I've worked to get here. The money that I made from that partnership is putting me through school.
Let me do a quick shift to another subject. You suggested the possibility of working for Dow. They've been in the center of a certain amount of controversy because of the chemicals they produce, because of their support of the, I think, the nuclear plant or something in Midlands. Have you thought about the extent to which large corporations like that are moral or immoral, and whether or not you would like to work for them because of that? I mean, does that even enter into your thinking at all? I mean, where do you draw the line? If someone said, I'll give you a terrific job with a company which manufactures trigger mechanisms for nuclear bombs, and they meet all of your requirements, do you gladly march into that plant, or do you have a reservation because of what they are producing?
First of all, no amount of money in the world is enough to make me go to a job that I don't like. I may suffer through a job long enough to find myself something I do like, but I'm not just going to walk in there and say, all right, just give me $50,000 a year. I'll keep my mouth shut. I'll do what I'm told to do. I'll sit at my office. I'll sign these little papers. If I don't want to do that, I'm not going to sit there and do that.
There could be a number of very attractive things about a job, but the end product might not be to your liking.
Mm-hmm.
You could be in the field. You could be selling something which you could be your own boss and selling something which some people had a need for, but it could be related to an aspect of the defense industry. It could be related to chemical warfare. You could be working for General Dynamics. You could be in the field for General Dynamics and representing something which, quote, wasn't directly related to a peaceful matter, end quote.
As a communicator, I think it's one of my duties to let, if I am working for a corporation, let them know how I do feel about this product. I don't think that I should be out in the field promoting something that I don't believe in. I'm not going to do a very good sell job if I do that. If there's something on the market that I don't think is worth anything, or I think is harmful, then I can't honestly come up to the farmer and say, you really should have this. You need this. You have to buy this. I can't promote something I don't believe in.
Okay, I'm going to make a transcript of this interview.
Okay.
And send it to you. And in 10 years, if you haven't thrown it aside or use it for side insulation in your new home or something, you'll pick it up and you'll read it. Now, what is it that you would like to read? In terms of the philosophy that you've generally stated, is there something that you feel that you would like to be able to look back on and say, hey, I did say that, and it did make sense. It was consistent. It is part of my philosophy today. I'm really asking you to project yourself in the future.
Some of my philosophies are definitely going to change. I don't know which ones, and I don't know how, and I don't know why, but as you grow out of things, you grow into things. But I think most of the basic values that I have right now, I've had for quite a while. And I think that something you stick with for so long is going to stay. Stick with what works. And if it works for me to go up to a new setting and turn down someone who offers a drink, then I'm going to keep doing it. If that's the way I want to be, that's the way I'm going to be. I'd like to look back on this interview and say, wow, that was an intelligent young man. And I hope to hold most of the values that I hold today. And I don't think I'll have a lot of trouble doing that.
Good. Are there any other comments that you care to make about any of these questions?
From the short time that I've been here, I would definitely say that college is an experience that you don't want to miss. There's a lot of things you can learn, but a professor once told me that you don't learn much in college, but you do learn how to learn when you get out of college. When you get into your field of study, college prepares you to learn what you need to know. And I think that that's some advice I'm going to carry with me for a long time. As long as I'm prepared to learn, then it won't be hard to do so. But college is something that I think everybody should experience. And there are a lot of benefits to it. The biggest one being that you don't have to pump gas for the rest of your life. And if you do have any goals that are higher than pumping gas, then I think this is a great place to start.
I think that sums it up very nicely.
I hope so.
To support that, there's one statistic which says that 10 years out of college, only 20% of the graduates are working in a field which directly related to their major.
Mm-hmm.
Another statistic which says that in the course of a normal working lifetime, somebody will change their vocation 4 to 5 times.
Mm-hmm. That's why I picked a broad field. Communications is a very broad field, and if I go out in the workplace and I find that I don't like this job, I can go somewhere else. And if I do get my minor in social psychology, I can take that somewhere else. Or marketing, I can go just about anywhere. And I think if there is any advice that I did listen to was in an interview that I had with the president of the Alumni Association, and he said, make sure you have a broad field. Make sure you know how to write, make sure you know how to speak.